Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, May 16th, 2025. We'll start today's reading on the front page with Education, a New School, Comes to Life. Dansby Jr. Magnet to open in August gets positive reviews at Open House. Lucretia Cole was impressed by the space at the new Ellsworth Dansby Jr. Magnet School as she toured the facility. "It's beautiful," said her daughter, Taylor DeWalt, who will be in fourth grade there this fall. "I love it," said Cole. "I love it for the kids. I love it for the colors. I love that they took their time and designated it so it would be nice. I think they thought about the kids and what would be good for them, and I think it's going to be a great fit for American Dreamer, which has K through 8th grade, and they have enough room for everybody, and it's not going to be crowded," she said. As a parent, she added with a chuckle, "she's thrilled with the parking lot, which is big enough to accommodate a lot of cars." Dansby will open in August, and the American Dreamer STEM Academy program will move there. With new school colors, a new mascot, the flyers, in honor of the man the school was named for, Ellsworth Dansby Jr., was a Tuskegee Airman, a Master Sergeant in the Army Air Corps during World War II, and after the war returned to his hometown and later served on the Decatur Public Schools Board of Education, among his many community service activities. Principal Rita Ellis told visitors on Wednesday that she learned about Dansby during a professional development session for staff, which was focused on local people that the educators might not know of, and was intrigued by his story. When it came time to choose a name for the new building, Dansby was an obvious choice. "The students at the school already know his story, and new ones will learn it," she said, as they walked the halls named in his honor. It was the students who chose the new mascot, as Dansby was a pilot and after the war had his own private plane and worked on it himself. Ellis is only in her third year as principal and told the visitors that she remembers telling her friends as a child that someday she was going to be a principal and build a school. "Year one of being a principal, I was told, you're getting a new building, and we're going to build it from the ground up," Ellis said. "Year two, I was able to be on the grounds, groundbreaking, coming through, making decisions, seeing the building built from the ground up was an experience that I never thought I'd be able to go through, and here we are in my third year as principal, and the building has come to life. The school is so big that you might get lost the first day," said fifth grader Ava Koshinsky, who already knew which classroom would be hers the next year and has taken her mother to see it. "The desks are modern, with only a small drawer under the tabletop for students' belongings, and Ava was wondering where they were going to keep all the rest of their things, assuming they'd have a cubby of some sort. But other than the desks, she's pleased with this classroom, which features huge windows and lots of natural light." Coaches Tiara Thomas and Kiara Sibley are mostly interested in the new gymnasium, they said, because at American Dreamer current location, the gym isn't big enough to host middle school games and is barely adequate for practice sessions. At Dansby, they have a full-size competition gym with bleachers. "I like the building," Sibley said. "It's nice. It's like a mini high school for the kids, and they took their time, and it's money well spent for everything in here." Renovations to American Dreamer's building on North Taylor were put on hold on May 2022 after the costs of those renovations were revealed to be far higher than anticipated due to the cost of building materials. Just to provide a middle school gym and some of the smaller items on the list of needed renovations was going to cost $10.8 million instead of $2.5 million anticipated, and that did not include classroom additions for the school to accommodate the 7th and 8th graders when those grades were added. The building also needed a new roof and repairs to the windows, both of which would have required asbestos abatement. Windows are one of them and require a long waiting period for delivery due to supply chain holdups. The site of the former Oak Grove School, which had been demolished after being closed in May 2021, was still in the hands of Decatur Public Schools and was chosen for the site of the new Magnet School. The district had to alter their application to use the COVID funds for that building instead of a new Dennis building, which had been the original plan until it became clear that no suitable site in the West End for a new Dennis School was available. The district had to reapply, which they did, and the Illinois State Board of Education approved that application. Groundbreaking for the new school was held in September 2023 with special guest Ellsworth Dansby III. The board also came to an intergovernmental agreement with Decatur Park District to purchase Oak Grove Park next to the new school in March of this year. The park will still be available for use by the neighborhood, but will be part of the school grounds and under the district's control if changes are deemed necessary to equipment, for example. "It's good for the kids," said Alicia Kofer, whose daughter, Camilla, will be in second grade there next year, with her son, Kiri, will be in kindergarten. "It's way better than what they have now." Middle school students were taken to the new building ahead of the public tour date so they would see and get to know the building and serve as tour guides during the event. While the eighth graders won't have the benefit of attending school in that new building next year, they're still happy their schoolmates will. "I kind of hate they're moving after we're leaving," Trinity Harden said, "but I like it, and it's big and nice, a nice school." And the photos here on page A6, the large one here is in the gym, and it's a very colorful gym with, must be green and gold, and black are their colors, and there on the wall there's a mural of a prop airplane, a World War II airplane, and the walls have stripes of yellow, green, or gold, I guess, and black. And the floor of the gym has shooting areas in the center circle are green. And there's children with their backs to us looking at the cheerleaders, and they have green ribbons in their hair. The Future Flyers cheer team performed for the crowd in the gymnasium during an open house of the new Ellsworth Dansby Jr. Magnet School in Decatur on Wednesday, May 14th. Oh, and there's a banner up on another wall of the gym that says Flyers. That's their mascot, the Flyers. And a smaller picture shows sixth grader, a very tall sixth grader, June Feeler, or Filer, gives a tour of the music room during an open house of the new Ellsworth Dansby Jr. Magnet School in Decatur on Wednesday, excuse me, May 14th. And I think I see several parents and children, and maybe Ellsworth Dansby Jr. The third standing there with Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. And then another picture, a smaller photo, shows Dansby's future students play on the swings. We're looking from a room inside the school with big windows, and outside we see children on playground equipment. Dansby future students play on the swings, seen through the large windows of one of the classrooms, which provide abundant natural light. And on the front page, there's a large, very colorful picture, the Ellsworth Dansby Jr. Magnet School common area is filled with people for the first time during welcoming remarks of an open house in Decatur on Wednesday, May 14th. It is filled with people, and it's a nice, bright, big room with another, second story looking down onto the common room. And very colorful. This one is painted accents of red everywhere. And a smaller photo shows Principal Rita Ellis interacting with students in the gymnasium during an open house of the new Ellsworth Dansby Junior Magnet School in Decatur on Wednesday, May 14th. Also on the front page, Illinois politics, budget forecast drops by $500 million. Menar, revision driven by economic uncertainty. This is from Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget office this week slashed its revenue estimate for the next fiscal year by more than $500 million, a relatively small but not insignificant revision that will force budget negotiators to make some structural changes to the spending blueprint the governor introduced in February. Pritzker proposed a $55.2 billion spending plan in February. The administration and state lawmakers have since been negotiating largely behind closed doors the fine details of the budget, which is expected to be considered before the end of the spring legislative session on May 31st, and it will need fine-tuning as the governor's office revenue estimate now falls below the spending that was first proposed a few months ago. The Governor's Office of Management and Budget, in a report released earlier this week, revised its revenue estimate for the fiscal year that begins July 1st from about $55.4 billion to about $54.9 billion, a $536 million drop. While representing just a 1% decline, the forecast complicates an already tight fiscal picture, as Pritzker and state lawmakers seek to bring the budget into balance amid uncertainty over the health of the nation's economy and the status of federal funds that the state relies on for key programs. The governor's office's revenue estimate is now in closer alignment with that of the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, the budget research arm of the state legislature, which last week revised its revenue forecast up $266 million from March to $54.5 billion. A deviation that was once nearly $1 billion has been winnowed down to about $427 million. However, Pritzker's estimate takes into account an extra $500 million in proposed revenue enhancements that COGFA does not. These proposals, which include a delinquent tax payment incentive program, a pause in the final shift of state taxes on motor fuel purchases to the road fund, and raising the tax on table and electric games at casinos, would require legislative approval. Deputy Governor Andy Menar, who oversees the budget process for Pritzker, laid blame for the state's budget troubles at the feet of President Donald Trump and Republican lawmakers in Washington, suggesting that politics, like the enactment and/or threat of blanket tariffs, has harmed the economy. The downward revision of the state's revenue estimate in the April report from GOMB is largely driven by the economic uncertainty and anxiety fueled by the Trump administration and Republicans in Congress, Menar said, pointing to what he calls reckless economic policies that have resulted in a decline in gross domestic product during the first quarter. This growing national instability poses a serious risk to Illinois' continued economic progress and outlook. Also lacking in certainty is the amount of federal dollars that Illinois will receive. Federal lawmakers are working on crafting their own budget. At the center of it, Trump and congressional Republicans are seeking to extend and build upon the tax cuts signed into law in 2017, which are set to expire at the end of the year. To help offset the nearly $5 trillion cost, there would be about $800 million in cuts to Medicaid, the nation's health care program, for more than 70 million people with low incomes and disabilities. One federal proposal would cut the cost share for Medicaid expansion under Obamacare from 90% to 80% in states that provide health care to undocumented immigrants. Illinois covers all children, regardless of immigration status, and some adults. If the cost share is reduced, Illinois has trigger language on the books that would automatically end Medicaid expansion, leaving more than 770,000 people without coverage. Lizzie Whitehorn, director of the Illinois Department of Health and Family Services, the agency that oversees the state's Medicaid program, told lawmakers earlier this year that the state received more than $20 billion from the federal government in 2024 for Medicaid, accounting for about 62% of the program's cost. There's no state in the union, including Illinois, that can ever match the scope and scale of the federal government's budget and their obligations to taxpayers, Menar said. Despite Pritzker and Democrats raising alarms, the governor's office, budget office, only revised its estimated federal revenues in the general fund by about $70 million, or 1.6%. COGFA's projection was $270 million, or 6%. Whatever challenges that lay before the budget crafters, Menar reiterated that Pritzker will only sign a balanced budget. The governor's blueprint includes additional funding for K-12 education and to pay down the state's massive pension obligations, but reins in spending in other areas to account for the slowdown in revenue growth after years of windfalls from COVID-19 stimulus funds and post-pandemic economic activity. It would estimate the Health Benefits for Immigrant Adults program, which provides health care to non-citizen adults between the ages of 42 and 64, regardless of immigration status, who are otherwise ineligible for Medicaid benefits. This would save the state about $420 million, according to the state budget officials. Unlike the current year's budget, which relied on a collection of tax hikes totaling about $750 million to bring it into balance, the 2026 proposal does not include new taxes. Pritzker told lawmakers in his February budget address that he had to make difficult decisions about programs that he's championed, and that they would too. He then warned them that if you come to the table looking to spend more, I'm going to ask you where you want to cut. State Senator L.G. Sims, Democrat of Chicago, who leads budget negotiations for the Senate Democrats, said lawmakers are now having those discussions about what the priorities are from one area to the next. But he said tax hikes are not on the table, at least for now. There are a lot of issues and competing challenges right now, Sims said, and that's not to say that we're going to raise taxes on every Illinoisan, on everyday Illinoisans. What we're doing is looking at living within the resources we have. State Representative Andy Ellick, Republican of Alton, the House Republican budget negotiator, said lawmakers are going to have to be nimble and flexible, considering the uncertainty surrounding federal funding. Sadly, Illinois has relied on federal government revenues, COVID monies, and things like that for all these years that nobody remembers what it was like before, Ellick said. And that's a concern. You shouldn't be hanging your hat on the fact that the federal government's going to bail out a state like Illinois that's overspending. There is some chatter that lawmakers may have to make adjustments to whatever spending plan they approve during a special session in the summer and during their veto session this fall. And the photos here on page A2 show where they have a headshot of Andy Menar, and then shows State Representative Amy Ellick, Democrat of Alton, criticizing a bill that would create new homeschool oversight requirements in a speech on April 11th, 2025. And there's several other lawmakers around her. She's speaking into a microphone. And then there's a picture of Senator L.G. Sims, Democrat of Chicago. He's pictured in a Senate committee Thursday, May 25th, 2023. In more local news, then, on page A2, American Giants Museum, larger-than-life Memorial Day weekend events. Atlanta. The American Giants Museum in Atlanta will be hosting its second annual Memorial Day weekend celebration with meet and greets, tours, food, and other events. The festivities will take place May 22nd through May 26th with the museum doors at 100 Northwest Arch Street, open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day. The American Giants Museum was designed and developed as a partnership between museum founder Joel Baker and the Atlanta Betterment Fund, which operates the museum and held its grand opening during Memorial Day weekend 2024. Events and opportunities during this month's celebration include the following: meeting Baker for a Q&A session along with other Muffler Men collectors and enthusiasts, talks on Muffler Men, Giants, and the history behind those roadside attractions, exclusive merchandise available for purchase, guided tours with Baker, erecting two new Giants, a Viking and a Phillips 66 Cowboy, food trucks. Baker approached the fund organization several years ago with the idea of creating a museum with his collection of Giants, sales materials, files, photos, and other documents as the basis for the exhibits. The museum shares the history of large fiberglass statues called Muffler Men in a space that resembles a vintage Texaco service station. It's considered one of the largest collections of Muffler Men in one place along historic Route 66. The Muffler Men characters were made in the 1960s and 70s by International Fiberglass Company in Venice, California. The Giants varied in size, with some dressed as cowboys, Vikings, Native Americans, and more notably as Paul Bunyan and the Texaco Big Friend. While International Fiberglass Company went out of business in 1976, the Giants, which had been scattered across the length of Route 66 to help businesses garner attention and draw in customers, continued to attract tourists traveling along the historic highway. Recently, in Bemidji, Minnesota, a fiberglass giant named Nana Bijou, a Muffler Man made to appear as a Native American, was moved to central Illinois under Baker's ownership. Nana Bijou is an 18-foot tall, 400-pound Native American with one arm raised in greeting and was installed in 1963 outside the Morrell's Chippewa Trading Post gift shop. Baker said the original plan was to spruce up this giant and have it set up in time for Memorial Day weekend. But upon taking down the giant, he realized it needs additional restoration work to make it structurally safe. Baker said he hopes the giant will be standing by next year for the 2026 centennial celebration of Route 66. Visit American Giants Museum, all one word, lowercase, AmericanGiantsMuseum.com. For more information and event updates. To donate toward restoration of the giant, individuals may earmark donations to the American Giants Museum or directly donate to Baker at usagiants.com. Again, usagiants.com. And the photo here is a bird's eye view, aerial view of the American Giants Museum, 100 Northwest Arch Street in Atlanta, Illinois, has several events planned for Memorial Day weekend. And the photo here was taken May 15th, 2024. And we see several older cars parked outside what looks like an old Texaco gas station, with American Giants painted on the front and a Texaco sign. And then that looks like there's a giant statue of maybe that's a Texaco worker standing there, but he's very tall. And then there's a little picnic area that we see outside the museum. In more local and state news on page A3, accused shooter jailed. Devin D. McKinney, accused of shooting and wounding a Decatur man he doesn't like, didn't seem to realize things were going against him at his arraignment hearing. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Lindsay Shelton had just decided he was too dangerous to be granted pretrial release and ordered him to be kept in the custody of the Macon County Jail. "You are all set," for today," Sheldon told him at the end of the hearing, April 30th. "So I'm going to stay?" asked McKinney, 23. "You are going to stay," replied the judge. Sheldon had more bad news for him at his preliminary hearing Wednesday. Ruling was probable cause to try him on charges of the aggravated discharge of a firearm at an occupied vehicle and the aggravated unlawful use of a weapon. McKinney is also charged with aggravated battery involving the discharge of a gun and being a felon in possession of a weapon. He entered not guilty pleas to all counts and was told by Shelton he wasn't going to be released because he still posed too much of a danger to public safety. The charges against him date to the afternoon of March 15th in the 500 block of South Haworth Street. An arrest was filed by the Decatur Police Department, said that McKinney had shot an adversary associated with a rival street gang, Dion C. Hyde. He was wounded in the lower abdomen. But the warrant, signed by Detective Cody Rose, quotes Hyde in the hospital telling his girlfriend that he had actually fired at McKinney first. He had earlier seen McKinney driving in a car with his girlfriend and two children before firing a handgun, later recovered by police, and getting off several shots that hit the car before the weapon jammed. He then had been struck by return fire as the car sped away. Defense attorney Courtney Anderson had concentrated on who fired first when arguing unsuccessfully for McKinney deserving pretrial release. "I think that the evidence is overwhelming that the alleged victim in this case is the dangerous one," she told the judge at the arraignment hearing. As for the 22-year-old Hyde, he was arraigned Wednesday on gun charges, including the aggravated discharge of a weapon and the aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. Shelton also denied him pretrial release on public safety grounds, and he will be back in court for a preliminary hearing May 28th, when he will enter pleas to the charges. Prison inmate guilty of murder, hate crime, Rockford. An inmate at Thompson Penitentiary in Thompson has been convicted of murder and hate crime in the slaying of a fellow inmate who prosecutors say was beaten to death because he was Jewish. A federal jury in U.S. District Court in Rockford found Brandon Simonson, also known as Whitey, 41, of Moorhead, Minnesota, guilty Tuesday, May 13th, of all four counts filed against him in connection with the 2020 death of Matthew Phillips, whose charges include second-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, hate crime, and assault, according to a news release. According to the evidence presented at the 7-day trial, Simonson conspired with co-defendant Christopher Martin to beat Phillips because he was Jewish. Simonson and Martin assaulted Phillips to gain recognition and membership into a white supremacist, anti-Semitic prison gang called the Valhalla-bound Skinheads, according to the release. Evidence showed Simonson punched and kicked Phillips in the face and head, despite Phillips being knocked unconscious and unable to defend himself, the release said. The assault on March 2, 2020, led to Phillips's death 3 days later. Martin, also known as No Luck, 43, of Brazil, Indiana, pleaded guilty earlier this year and is awaiting sentencing, according to the release. Simonson will be sentenced August 22nd, 2025. And that's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, May 16th, 2025. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.